You're listening to the School Success Formula, episode number 3. Today, we're talking about how to thrive in the jobs market after leaving school. Our guest today spent many years in the pharmaceutical business, both in sales and in setting up clinical trials, including a project set up to find the solutions to the MRSA superbug. In recent years, his attention has turned to helping young people access the jobs market. On his website, aspire-academy.net, he relates the scenario of speaking to a young woman working on the checkout at a supermarket. Close to tears, she related to Barry how she had a 2-1 degree, but this was the best job she was able to find. She felt hopeless and despondent. Barry's mission is to try to stop this kind of thing happening to young people by giving them the tools that aren't taught in schools to help them flourish in the jobs market. Welcome to the show, Barry Jackson.
Thank you. Delighted to be with you, Lucy. Privileged to be talking to you. So, fire away.
Fantastic. Well, I feel like I have got stuff to learn from you. So I'm sure the parents and students listening will have loads to learn. Having read your website, I've never had a problem finding a job, but there's things on that you talk about on your website that I know I could learn from. So I'm really looking forward to this conversation. So can you tell us what you think the biggest mistakes are that you see young people making as they prepare for the world of work?
It's a good question that, and I'm going to answer that in two bits, if I may, okay. Lucy, yep. Because let's just take the question as it stands. What are the biggest mistakes? Mm-hmm. One of them is not giving enough attention to a CV.
Okay.
I do a lot of mock interviews in schools, and the most frequent advice that I give to teenage interviewees is, look, you have interviewed really impressively with me, but you would never have got in a real situation, you would never have got in front of me in the first place because your CV is rubbish. They just don't treat CVs with enough seriousness. So
okay,
I think
and is the problem with the CVs that they don't have enough to say, or that they say it really badly?
They say it badly. They just don't see why a CV is important. In fact, it's interesting that when I'm giving advice on CVs, I often begin by asking the young person, look, what from your point of view do you think is the purpose of your CV? Now, you and I both know that the purpose of a CV is to get you in front of the interviewer. If it does that, it's served its purpose. But when I ask that question, what from your point of view do you see as the purpose of your CV? I've yet to meet a student who can give me that answer. Mm-hmm. This is basic, you know.
What do they think it's for if they don't think that's the function of it?
Well, they just don't give any kind of answer at all. It's kind of as if they've been hit with a question they've never thought of for themselves. And I think that is actually the case. Asking young people questions that they've probably never been asked before by anybody reveals all kinds of weaknesses that they're just not even aware they have.
Yeah.
Really disturbing, that.
Yeah, definitely. So the CV is a major weakness. Are there any other kind of mistakes that you see young people making?
Well, yes. Some of them have no idea to present themselves at interviews or to present themselves at, say, job fairs. Obviously, I can't sit in on job interviews, but I do go to quite a lot of job fairs where young people have amazing opportunities to meet with network with, build relationship with business people, and they go along looking as if, you know, the boys go along looking as if they just come in from a street brawl, the girls turn up looking as if they're on the pull, and they wonder why they're just, you know, and it just doesn't seem to occur to them that here's an opportunity to really impress people, and they almost go out of their way to do the complete opposite. It's things like that where you think all you need to do, just give a bit of thought to this, please, you know.
Okay, so if you were advising a young person from scratch, like they're looking for jobs, how should they dress, how should they present themselves when they go into that kind of environment where they're meeting possible employers?
Right. Well, I mean, male or female, the important thing is to remember is you are going in to give the impression that you are a professional young man or a professional young lady. Mm-hmm. Now, for a boy, that at very least means a collar and tie, smart pair of trousers, clean shoes that have been polished that day. Now, girls, of course, have got a lot more flexibility than lads. Girls can wear all sorts of things and look professional, but I think that is the key word. You know, think to yourself about the person you are meeting. What is she going to if the interviewer is going to be a lady, let's pretend it is, how do you think she is going to be dressed? And if you're a girl, then that's the way you should be dressed. You know, she is not going to have had a bath in perfume, she's not going to have so much eyeshadow that she looks like a clown. Mm-hmm. She's not going to wear frisbees the size of earrings the size of frisbees that make her look like a chav. This is common sense stuff, yeah. Lucy. Shouldn't need to be pointed out, but I'm afraid it does.
Yeah. Well, to me, it almost seems like, you know, at school, you get tribes of teenagers and they all kind of dress similarly to each other. Like when I was at school, you know, you might have had the goths and you might have, you know, you have different groups of people and they all kind of have their own dress code.
Yes, they do.
What they've got to think about is what is the dress code of the place that I'm trying to fit into with getting That's this right. job. And, you know, how does that tribe dress? And I've got to emulate that. And, you know, if you've got, I don't know, piercings, tattoos, whatever, that don't fit in with that tribe, then what can you do to minimise that or disguise it and actually fit in?
I think that's absolutely hit the nail on the head. I couldn't put it better myself.
Okay, brilliant. Okay, we've talked a bit about CVs as well. So if the job of a CV is to get you an interview, what do you put in a CV as a young person to kind of make an employer think, yes, I want to meet that person and have a proper conversation with them to see if they're going to fit my needs in my organisation? Yeah.
Well, that's a question when I was doing research to create my programs. That was one of the questions I asked employers. What do you like to see in the CV? And of course, every employer has a slightly different take on that. Mm-hmm. But I think we can put them under certain headings. First of all, what are your qualifications, right? They need to see what those are. And that's straightforward. That's easy. Second thing I think they want to know is what are your achievements and what are your skills. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of young people get very confused by those two terms. They're not quite sure what the difference is.
Yeah.
So to make that simple to understand, an achievement is exactly that. Let's take an example. It might be winning a tennis tournament. The skills are what you needed, what enabled you to win the competition. You know, you've got a good backhand volley or you've got a powerful serve or something like that. So employers want to know what your achievements were and what your skills are. They want to know your ambitions and your motivation. Again, this is another thing that a lot of young people get confused about what do these two terms mean. Now, an ambition, let's take something completely outside the job sphere, an ambition might be to climb Mount Kilimanjaro, okay? Yes. Your motivation is your why. Why do you want to climb Mount Kilimanjaro? Why is that important to you? And I think employers, as much as wanting to know what your ambition is, I think they want to know what drives you, because it's that as much as anything else that enables an employer to match your value system with their value system. That this is probably the single most important thing that enables them to decide whether you are a good fit, not just for the job, but do you fit in with the ethos of the company as well? And I think the other thing that is really important is that thing which is called character. Yes. And again, when I ask young people, now, what do you think is meant by character? I find that most of them really struggle to give an intelligent answer to that. But it's really important to employers. And of course, there's a whole raft of things that come under this, things like courage, persistence, reliability, compassion, sense of humor, you know, I mean, there's a whole raft of them. But I think the reason that a lot of young people struggle to define them is that these are not things that you can, in which you can sit an exam and be given a grade. You know, they can't be measured in amounts. You can't say, well, you know, I'm 70% brave or something, you know. So it's difficult. But every employer knows what these characteristics are. Yeah. They would come under what I call credentials rather than qualifications, if that makes sense.
Yeah, something I found really useful. I did a course a while back, and one of the suggestions was that you ask 25 people who know you what your three greatest attributes are, and mine came back with things like loyalty and determination. And you know, when you get that echoed back to you, like I was really surprised that so many people said to me loyalty was something that they recognized in me almost above any other value, and that can really be eye-opening, but also to teach you an awful lot about who you are as a person. And I think it's quite a useful exercise for everybody to go through.
Yes, I think I think so. I think that is very sound advice.
Yeah. Okay, so you talked a bit. Well, one of the things that I think is very difficult for young people entering the jobs market is that they might have done huge amounts of stuff outside school and have brilliant qualifications inside school, but not much of it is directly relevant to the job that they're actually applying to do. And so when you talked about what drives you, what motivates you, how do you actually convey that within the context of a formal CV? Because, you know, all the CVs I've ever written is basically been, these are my qualifications, these are my achievements, and these are the things that, you know, the attributes that I had that led to these achievements. There's not much space for kind of this vision or this description of your values and drive. So how do you actually take that into the context of a CV?
A really, really important question, that one. And I think it's all down to the way you word it. I mean, one of the things that young people are told all the time by their teachers, and this is absolutely right, is don't tell the employer something, demonstrate it. Problem is, they're not told what that means. So for example, if they want to convey the fact that they're a leader, for example, they will say, I was the captain of the hockey team. And they think that demonstrates leadership. It doesn't demonstrate anything at all.
You were picked to be captain of the hockey team.
I mean, the worst hockey team in the world, you know, the hockey team that got relegated had a captain. Every army that was ever defeated on a battlefield had a general. So it's no good. It's a complete nonsense to put down a title. The way you do it, let's take something nice and simple like a paper round. Let's say that's part of your experience, that when you were sort of 12, 13, 14, you did a paper round. What you do is when you put down on your, so what I would suggest is when you put that down on your, on a CV or even in a conversation, what you add is, in order to do this, I had to get up every morning at 6:30.
Yeah.
Now, you haven't said anywhere, I am reliable, I am dedicated, but merely by putting that in, you allow the person reading that to draw the conclusion for herself that you are a person who can be relied upon to get up at unsocial hours, that you have commitment, that you have loyalty, that you are a person that can be relied on. The best way to sell yourself to anybody is to put something down that invites her to draw the conclusion for herself.
Yeah.
That is, and I could use, so if we come back to the leadership one, for example, rather than say I was the captain of the hockey team, describe, tell a story, even if it's just in a few words. So to pick an aspect of leadership. So, for example, how did you keep your team motivated after they played really badly and got hammered? You know, how did you? We had a really bad performance. We knew we'd underperformed. So, as the captain, this is what I did to raise the spirits of the team to make sure that next time we gave 100%. And again, what you're then doing, you're telling a story, but you're inviting the interviewer. To draw that conclusion for herself. Here's a girl who knows what she's talking about, and that is much more much more powerful than saying I'm a leader. Yeah, I mean that, you know, everybody's going to say that.
It's like the difference between showing through actions rather than words. So you describe what you did rather than told what you did, if that makes sense, if that distinction makes sense. And it's all about the how, really. How, like, I was captain of the hockey team, and how I did that job, really.
Yes. That's right. If you can put a story in, and of course, every manager has been in that situation where they have to deal with underperformance, because none of us, however dedicated and good we are, I mean, I get days, and I'm sure you do too, Lucy, where without a boss being there to tell you, you know that today I did not do as well as I possibly could have done. And everybody has to everybody in management has to handle that one. Mm-hmm. So if you can say, well, I've done this, this is how I handled it, this was the outcome in the context of a hockey game, the fact that you're not being interviewed for a job playing hockey, it doesn't matter.
No, not at all. No, exactly. And it's having that ability. And I talk about this a lot with personal statements for university as well, is taking seemingly unrelated experiences and achievements and turning them into something that demonstrates the skills and the character traits that they're actually looking for. And it is a skill, really, with words that you are able to turn things around in that way.
Yeah. I mean, you've got it. You've got it exactly.
Okay. Right. Moving on. So on your website, you said that 50% of jobs are filled without ever being advertised. So what can young people or even old people do to find these jobs?
Right. Well, the way you go about it is... think about it from the point of view of the employers. I mean, first of all, why do they do this? Why are so many jobs filled without being advertised? And how do the employers go about finding potential people to work with them? I mean, how do they find the people that they're going to approach and say, we've got this job coming up in a couple of months' time. Are you interested in applying? Because if you are, then, you know, subject to a satisfactory interview, the job's yours if you want it. Why do they do that? And how do they go about it? Well, I mean, one of the most obvious ways, and I could do a whole seminar on this, but the most obvious way that they go about it is to go to job fairs. So as a student, all you need to you need to start off by saying, well, where do they go to look for people like me? And job fairs are a very good example of where they go. So go along and meet them.
Mm-hmm.
And for goodness sake, spend time at each of the stands. Don't do what so many young people do. They go into a room full of potential employers. They have a look, and if there isn't anybody there that's got a job they're immediately interested in, they go around, they grab a few freebies, they spend about 5 minutes in a hall full of potential employers and disappear.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's daft. And if we, again, if we can use a sports analogy, I mean, I'm not into football, by the way. I don't know whether you are, but
not,
I gather,
really, not really.
but I do know enough about it to know that there's a guy called Lionel Messi, who most people consider to be the best footballer in the world. Or somebody like Cristiano Ronaldo, you know, I mean, these top players, I mean, whether you're interested in football or not doesn't matter, but I can absolutely guarantee that somebody spotted them when they were 11, 12 years old, when they weren't good enough or old enough to be in anybody's first team, but somebody spotted the talent,
mm-hmm.
Got them on their books very early, developed them, and then developed them into stars. So and that is, you know, that's, we know that that's how football scouts work.
Mm-hmm.
That is exactly how employers work. They're always going out looking for young people that they can develop relationships with, to get them on their books, and develop them into the people that they're looking for, so that when the time comes, they just pick up the phone to a lad or a girl that they already know and like, and the offer's there.
Yeah, so this all comes through having conversations, and it's effectively networking, isn't it? It's putting yourself in a room.
That's exactly what it is. It is building a network of potential employers long before you need a job.
So what's the role of work experience in this kind of hidden jobs market?
Well, again, it can play a very important role, because, okay, when you do work experience, you probably are going to be there for about a week, not much more than that. But again, you have the opportunity to work with an employer. Now, if it's somebody, if it's a job that's in the kind of direction you want to go in anyway, that's ideal, because the employer knows that you're not ready for a full-time contract. But if you get on well with the employer, if you impress that person, there's every chance that at the end of the week you can say, how about we, in fact ask them, you know, ask them for feedback right through the week, how am I doing? And if at the end of the week you've been getting positive feedback, it's the most natural and easy thing in the world to say to the employer, how about we, you know, would you, I mean, I'm not job ready yet, but when I am, can we stay in touch? And now, why would the employer say no?
Exactly.
That's the question. But even if it's a job that's unrelated to the career you want to do, you don't know who that employer knows, right? It might be an engineering firm and you want to go into pharmaceuticals, but you'd be amazed how many other employers in unrelated businesses top executives know. You don't know who they can introduce you to, and the very worst that can come of a good week's work experience is a testimonial. You can put that, even if it's in an unrelated job, if you can take that to another, to a real employer later on, you know, nothing counts more than to have a really good testimonial from somebody, from another business person, you know.
So again,
it's the best recommendation you can have.
So the best outcome almost is getting work experience that actually leads directly to a full-time employed job at some point in the future. And you know, the most minimal thing is doing, just putting your heart and soul into it, putting your, you know, showing your best self and getting a really good reference or testimonial, and then being remembered by that person. And this is something I've never been very good at, is keeping in touch with people afterwards. But if you can use some kind of mechanism to keep in touch with those people and keep, you know, every few months dropping them a message or something, just saying what you're doing, they will remember you, and, you know, they will, you know, help you and offer you advice, hopefully, in your career path in the future.
Yes, they will, and I think this is something that we tend to forget, is that most business people, and I know there are exceptions to everything, but most business people are nice people. Most business people will fall over backwards to help young people, if only because they remember when they were like that, very unsure, not sure what career they wanted to follow, nervous, thinking, am I going to measure up? They've all, you know, the top executives remember that they were once like that. So they will usually lean over backwards to help young people. They're not ogres. In fact, I think a lot of young people, they watch The Apprentice and they see the way Alan Sugar interviewed. Which in my opinion is an appalling way to interview anybody. But of course, what you forget is it makes good television. But that's not how most interviews go.
No. So in talking about how to keep in touch with these people who you do make contact with, and they might not just be through work experience or job fairs, but it could be like friends of your parents or teachers or whatever. You talked a bit on your website about social media and how young people don't know how to use it to make these relationships and continue them. What advice could you give to students and to parents about how social media can be used as a really kind of strategic tool to help build a career?
Let's focus on the question: How do you keep the contact going? Mm-hmm. Because social media sort of can be used in this way, but there are other ways as well, and social media is only part of it. But I think the important thing is, after that initial meeting, which could be on a trade stand at a job fair. It could be a telephone conversation, but however it is, let's just make the assumption that the young person and the business person have got on well, they would like to carry on. The important thing is right at the end of that conversation, say, okay, we're going to stay in touch. Please, can I have your business card? Or if you're doing it on social media, can you send me your email address, your mobile number, whatever? And by the way, here are my contact details. Right. Mm-hmm. So you're not just asking somebody to, you know, gimme.
Yeah,
you're offering as well. So there's an implicit agreement there that we are going to stay in touch. You might take the conversation a little bit further and say, look, how about, so that we don't lose touch, how about I drop you a line once every 3 or 4 months, you know, whatever you think is reasonable, and I will just give you a progress report on how I'm doing, or I'll let you know what my A-level results are, or I'll let you know what I'm predicted in my degree, you know, again, whatever it happens to be, but look for reasons to stay in touch. The other thing that you could do, people will not everybody will agree with me on this one, but I think on a very personal level, you know, why not send somebody a Christmas card?
Yeah.
Just send them a Christmas. And a lot of young people think, oh, I'll be seen as being pushy. They'll think this is a bit presumptuous. Most people don't. How many Christmas cards do you think a chief executive or an HR manager gets from an A-level student?
Mm-hmm.
probably none. So if they get one from you, they, oh wow, how thoughtful, yeah. You know, that is going to be most people's reaction. So there will be opportunities to keep them updated, give them a progress report, but there will also be times when you, it's just a one-liner or just a Christmas card, or yeah. Or if it's the summer, you might say, have a lovely summer break, because chances are they'll be on holiday. You know, there are so many things that are in themselves are very small,
yes.
But make a tremendous impact on the person receiving it.
Yeah, and I think the big thing there is don't only get in touch when you want something. Actually, no. Keep the relationship going in between, so you're not
exactly.
Only asking for stuff.
Exactly.
And it that's the difficult thing, I think, sometimes, is remembering to make that contact when you don't actually need or want something. It's just reaching out and being friendly and nice.
Yes, it is. And I mean, I've had occasions, I mean, not very often, but on the other side, I'm sure I just sense, Lucy, that you've probably done this just because I think you come across to me as the sort of person who would. But when you, let's suppose you just happen to hear that something really bad has happened to somebody. I mean, I remember in my days in, I'm going back quite a long way now, to my days in pharmaceuticals, when my customers were mostly hospital consultants. I remember once somebody, I was talking to another doctor in another hospital, and someone said, Barry, isn't it awful what happened to whoever it was? And I said, what do you mean? I didn't know anything had happened. His wife was killed in a car crash the other day. Horrible, but the first thing I did as soon as I got home that night, I wrote a personal letter to that consultant and said, look, I'm absolutely devastated. I know there's nothing I can do to help you, but I just want you to know that my thoughts are with you at such an awful time. You're in my prayers, you know, something like that. And I'm not doing that because I hope he'll be impressed and, you know, give me an order in 6 months' time. That's not why I'm doing it. I'm doing it because I have compassion for him as a fellow human being. Mm. You know, we're not doing this with a benefit to ourselves in mind, but that is nevertheless a spin-off. People remember you for things like that.
So basically, if you're a decent human being, if you make relationships and you treat people well, then you're setting yourself up for success.
Yeah, you are setting yourself as a success, because very few people do it. We both know most people, they only run after you when they want something from you. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know this myself as a business person. I go into my emails, and I can pretty much guarantee that 9 out of 10 emails I get are sales pitches from somebody. Yeah. You know, I very rarely get something that is a personal message from somebody who sends it just because they like me.
Yeah. Okay, well, it sounds like you use tools, like whether it's social media, like LinkedIn or Twitter or whatever, or emails or Christmas cards or letters, whatever means of communication, you use those to build relationships and keep in touch with people. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct.
Okay. So another point you made on your website was that a lot of young people, and I come across this all the time with young people coming to me saying, I want to be a doctor or I want to be a lawyer. And I'm always a bit like, well, that's very nice, but do you really? Or is that just what you've heard of and you think it sounds impressive and, you know, that's why you're going for it? But you said that, you know, there are thousands of jobs that nobody's ever heard of. And I know when my very first job, I got a job working for Tesco.com. And, you know, before I went to university, you know, it'd never even been invented. So the job couldn't have existed. And that's going to be even more true for people who are going to university now and, doing their GCSEs now, that jobs that they will end up doing don't exist. So how do you prepare yourself for this kind of unknown job market? And also, like, how do you discover these jobs that you've never even heard of before that you might be absolutely brilliant at?
Well, yeah, and again, this is fascinating because as well as interviewing young people, young teenagers, I also talk a lot with people in the sort of 20 to 30 group, age group. And by the way, I only ask them this if they're obviously enjoying what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're obviously thoroughly enjoying their job, having a wonderful time, I love to ask them the question, if you'd been asked when you were 16 what career you want to follow, is this the job you would have described?
No.
The answer is almost always no. So then I say, okay, but if this is such a great job and you're having such a whale of a time, why would you not have described this as the job you were going to? And again, the answer to that question is always the same. I didn't even know it existed when I was at school. So then you get, okay, how did you find out? Now, there are a number of ways in which you can find out, but a lot of it is a question of... it's doing your own research. And again, this is something that careers advisors never seem to help young people with. The way I went about it, it's a long time ago, but what I did was to trawl, one of the things I did was to trawl through the job adverts, right? And that very often, just trawling through the job adverts, now they were in newspapers back then, now they're going to be online, but the principle's the same. Have a look what's being advertised, what are employers looking for? And I guarantee that if you do that, you will pick a, you will come across all sorts of jobs that you didn't know existed. Now, most of them, you'll probably look at that and say, well, you know, I'm not interested. Even now I do know it exists, it wouldn't be my my scene. But you will come across one, say, hey, I didn't know that exist. That sounds, it could be fun. And then you investigate a bit further, find out a bit more about it. The other way of doing that is just keep your eyes open as you go around. I don't know what it's like in Northampton, Lucy, but where I live, you cannot walk down a single street and not see solar panels on people's roofs. Okay. Now, that immediately, whether you're into solar panels or not, that immediately tells you this is a growing market.
Mm-hmm.
It's a market which a few years ago didn't exist. You go into a public toilet. I'm sorry to get down to this level, but I'm sure you remember the time when you go in there and you washed your hands, and the air dryer was so weak that you went out and you dried your hands on your handkerchief as you went out, and then suddenly the Dyson blade appeared. And of course Dyson has not just revolutionized drying your hands in a public toilet, they're inventing new vacuum cleaners and all sorts of things. Just walking around shops, you will see things appearing that weren't there a few years ago. You will, and you'll see who are the innovators. You know, who's made this? Right, here's a go-ahead company. Could there be a potential career with a company like that? A lot of it, all you have to do is wander around a shopping center, watch what's happening online, look at what jobs are being advertised, and you will pick up trends. You will begin to see that, this is clearly a job. This is obviously a market which is expanding, which is really going places, and therefore there are going to be jobs created there, and not just jobs, but jobs with good, with exciting prospects, jobs which are secure, rather than something which is like to go down the tubes next week because it's out of date. Do you see where I'm coming from?
Yeah, completely. I think the other thing to say about that from my own...
You just need to think creatively, Lucy.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that helps you kind of find ways into companies, but once you get into a company, actually the number and variety of jobs available there is is huge, and it's also constantly changing. So as the company evolves, and I think one of the things that I've particularly noticed in recent years is that actually companies create jobs to fit people rather than take people to fit jobs.
Oh, what a good point. What a good point. Yes, they do.
Yeah, and, you know, that actually I think a lot of companies are realising that this is a much more, much better way to be. So if you can find a company that fits your culture and your values and get in, then you will find that as you grow and get experience and stuff, you will... The company, if they like you, they will create opportunities for you to keep you because they like you.
Yeah, the savvy companies do. And of course, they're the best ones to work for. That's where the best jobs are. Those are the managers with a vision rather than just somebody who's got a job vacancy. Yes, I hadn't planned to raise that point this afternoon, but I'm glad you have, Lucy, because that is a really, really important point. If they really take to you, if they're really impressed with you, you're quite right, they will create a job to get you on board, because they can see that you have talents they can use. And also because they can see that if they don't do that, you're going to end up working for somebody else, and that might be somebody who's one of their competitors.
Yeah, completely. And this comes back to something else that I talk about all the time, is passion, and like what you're passionate about and what you're interested in. And this is really what you talked about earlier, about what drives you and what interests you and everything. And if you go into a company and you're really able to show what you're passionate about, but also what your genius is, you know, what you really are best at and what you thrive doing, if you're doing that and they see that, they're just going to give you more of it, because it's only going to be good for them. So like following your passions, and this is often counter to what's going on a lot with young people these days. They think they've got to take the sensible option, but actually, ultimately, the sensible option is often the thing that you're most passionate about, because that's how you're going to thrive and do your best. Is that something you'd agree with?
I absolutely agree with it. If you're not passionate about what you're doing, your chances of impressing at a job interview are very low, because it only needs one candidate who is absolutely on fire about the job, and the rest of the candidates can forget it. You know, it's that is exactly what employers are looking for: somebody who really gets excited, not just about the job. If you can demonstrate that you're passionate not just about the job, what you can bring to that company, but you're passionate about working for this particular company rather than the one down the road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely, and yeah, it's that passion and enthusiasm that really engages people. You know, it's just the same as having any conversation, really, an interview, isn't it? If you're really into what you're saying, and you know, you come alive when you're talking about it, then absolutely, you're going to make much more of an impression than if, you know, you're a bit boring and deadbeat.
Is the time for me just to share a very short story from
Please do.
I'm going right back to when I first joined the job market, and you know, the earth was still cooling back then. but I remember going for several interviews for the job as a pharmaceutical sales rep. Mm-hmm. And I remember three interviews that I went to, and they all went really well. I felt I had a pretty good chance of being offered. I thought there was every possibility I might get offered more than one job. But the interesting thing was, there was the third interview I went to. It was one of these absolute dream interviews where I not only did I know that I'd impressed the interviewer, I just really hit it off with this guy. You know, the chemistry was something else. I would have been happy with an offer from the other two companies, but this was the company I really wanted. I just felt that our value system, everything we stood for, gelled. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I came away from that interview absolutely on fire. But I was also afraid, because it was the last of the three, and I thought, well, what am I going to do if I'm offered a job by one of the others? Am I going to try and stall them until I get a reply from this guy? And what if he takes a fortnight? You know, and there were all these worries going through my mind. So the day after the interview, I rang the company up and said, "Look, please can I speak to Mr. Panthorpe? It's fairly urgent." And he came on the phone, we were already on first name terms, and I said, "Look, Keith, I don't want to put you under any pressure, but I just want to let you know that of the interviews I've been to, yours is the company I really want to join. I'm just a bit worried that because you're the third in line in terms of time, I don't want to be in a position where somebody else offers me a job and then you offer me one and I have to say, I'm sorry, I've already promised to somebody else. So if you want me, can I please ask you to get back to me as urgently as possible?" You know what? He offered me the job on the spot. Yeah. He said, "I'll tell you now, you're in."
There are things you can do by acting out of integrity to actually make things happen.
That is absolutely critical, by the way. You must never, never, under any circumstances, act out of integrity.
Yeah. No, it's something, actually, that scenario you've just described, something very, very similar happened to my husband recently when he was looking for a job. And he actually, in the interview, said to them, "Look, I've been interviewed for another job and I've been offered it, but I want to work for you." And I've told them that I'm coming for this interview. And they had interviews lined up the following week and they let him leave the room, but they ran after him and caught him in the street.
They ran after him.
Well, caught him in the street and said, "We're offering you the job," and they cancelled all the other interviews that they got lined up. So you know, having that genuine, authentic kind of urgency and acting on it—not just waiting for the time to elapse, but you know, it can make a big difference. But you should never manufacture that if it doesn't exist.
And people can tell if you're genuine. They really can. They can tell if you're genuine, and if you are genuine, I don't think it does any harm sometimes to be just a little bit cheeky, in a nice kind of way. As long as they can see that you are being authentic and this is not just putting on an act.
Yeah, no, what I'd teach at my last teaching job that I had, I went for the interview and there were five girls being interviewed there on the day. Girls, and we were women. And we were all interviewed and we got to the end of the day and they said, "Well, we're actually interviewing somebody else who was a former member of staff and he's in America and we're doing a telephone interview with him." We all had to sit there waiting while they did this telephone interview. And then we were all called in one by one to be told that they'd offered this job to this guy who wasn't even there. And he'd had a telephone interview rather than being present. And I was not happy with this at all, and I was just like, I've put my heart and soul into this interview, I desperately want this job, and I don't know what more I could have done. And I actually sat there in front of the headmaster. I was like, "You have to tell me, because I can't leave this room not knowing what I've done wrong." And in the end, he admitted that they knew this other guy because he'd worked with them before and they were going, you know, better the devil you know. But if he hadn't been there, I'd have been first in line. Anyway, a few weeks later, I got a phone call from the headmaster saying the other guy dropped out and he was offering me the job.
By showing that
level of passion and dedication, you know, I clearly marked myself out. And so he was the first person I called. I was the first person he called when the time came. So, stand up for yourself.
Stand up for yourself. Yeah, I mean, be memorable. You're not always going to land the job, even when you do absolutely everything right. You can never rule out the possibility that there's another candidate who's a friend of the managing director or whatever, or somebody who just impresses them a little bit more than you do. An awful lot of it, and we both know this, Lucy, an awful lot of it comes down to personal chemistry.
Yes.
And it might not be anything that even they could define, but so you're not always going to get the job, but if you're passionate and you are authentic, what I can guarantee is that you will always be in the frame, and if you're always in the frame, it's only a matter of time, and probably not a very long time, before somebody says, look, Lucy, the job's yours, when can you start, and that's how it works.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good place to start wrapping it up. And it's almost like, you know, it has to be the right place and right time. And I often tell people, you know, if you go for an interview, it is actually a two-way process, and
yes,
you know, if you don't like them and they don't like you, it's not the right fit. So, and you wouldn't have been happy anyway. So
no.
That as a message to move on and find something better.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, sometimes a rejection is a lucky escape.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Just a quick, I know people are going to be listening to this, so we don't want to go off at too much of a tangent. I'm kind of dying to ask you this question.
Okay, go on.
Have you ever told an interviewer in the middle of the interview that you're withdrawing your application? Because I have.
I haven't done that. No, I think you deserve big brownie points for that, though.
Well,
but again, it shows huge integrity.
Yes, I mean, I've only ever done it once in the whole of my life, but I once had an interviewer who was so obnoxious. I just thought that there's no way I want to, no way I want to work for you. So, the electricity between us was crackling, you know.
Yeah, in a bad way.
And we were about 10 minutes into the interview, and I actually said to the guy, look, let's just stop messing about here. I said, unless I've got this terribly wrong, I said, you're not going to offer this job to me, and even if you did, I think there's no way I'm going to accept it. So why don't we just terminate this and get home half an hour early? And he almost rocked back in it. It was almost as if I'd punched him in the face. I only had never spoken to him like that, but you're allowed to. There's nothing wrong with being assertive in an interview.
Yeah, and if you leave an interview thinking with a kind of heart sinking kind of feeling, you know it's not the opportunity for you, and
no, it
would be the right thing not to do it, and something better will come along eventually.
Oh, and it did.
Yeah, good.
Very quickly, actually.
Fantastic. Okay, well, we're going to start wrapping up now, Barry, but is there anything else you think parents and students should take away from what we've been talking about today that we haven't already mentioned?
I think we've covered as much as we could possibly cover within an hour. I think the only thing I would just add, again, is that I think one of the most critical success factors in this whole process is to start building a network of potential employers long before you need a job. I would just liken that to say, if we think for a moment about people taking part in the Olympic Games,
mm-hmm.
I mean, when do they start training? They start training immediately after the last Olympics. There's 4 years to go before they're even going to compete.
Yes.
But they know that unless they do that, there is no hope of them going in the medals. They don't go along they don't turn up at the opening ceremony and think, right, I'm running in the 200 meters next week, I'd better do a bit of sprint practice. I mean, that isn't going to work. But the equivalent in the job market is study until I get a qualification, and then I will go out applying for jobs along with tens of thousands of other young people, all chasing the same vacancies. You know, that is like the Olympic athlete not bothering to do any training until the opening ceremony. So we're not just talking about skills here, we're talking about strategies, and I think that is the thing that is most lacking in careers guidance in schools. They teach them about CVs, they teach them about interview skills, not the sort of level I would be happy with, but at least they do it.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to strategies, I think most schools don't even know what you're talking about. It's critical.
Well, to be honest, teachers haven't had to do most of this stuff anyway, so they don't have personal experience. And, you know, I've been a teacher, so I'm not stepping out of line here. You know, they don't have the personal experience to base all this stuff off.
They don't. And I don't mean that to imply a criticism of the teaching profession. I mean, you would not criticise a geography teacher for being unable to solve a quadratic equation. You take that, if you want to learn that, you go to the maths teacher. We wouldn't do that within a school. So why do we expect them to have all the answers to career advice? I mean, it's not fair, is it?
Okay.
It's just not
you
fair.
You do have some of the answers to career advice, and I'd love you to share exactly where people can get in touch with you and how people might be able to work with you if they've been inspired or interested by what you've had to say today.
Right, well, I think the first thing is, well, first of all there is my website, mm-hmm. but if somebody wants to contact me directly, I have no, you know, I've just talked to you about the way young people should not be afraid to contact employers directly at job fairs, through social media, whatever. Mm-hmm. So I encourage people to do the same thing with me, that not to feel they're being pushy, not to feel they're being cheeky, by dropping me an email or even giving me a phone. So my email address is quite simply barry@ aspire-academy.net. So that's Barry at aspire-academy.net. And if they want my telephone number, then it is 07795288490. And I don't have any problem with somebody ringing me up directly, and we'll just see where it leads. They can say no to me.
Well, I know that you have a program available on your website that helps young people to navigate all this stuff that you've been talking about today. So I think that's well worth checking out. And your website is aspire-academy.net, and we will put a link to that in the show notes, as well as all your social media if they want to chat on there in a kind of less formal way.
Sounds good to me.
Brilliant. So it's been an absolute pleasure having this discussion with you. And I just want to thank you for coming on to the show.
No, thank you for inviting me. It's been a privilege.
Wonderful. Thank you. Well, I hope you found that interesting and helpful. If you've got any questions and comments, please leave them on the show notes, which you'll find at lifemoreextraordinary.com/3, or post in the Supportive Parents Successful Students Facebook group, or send me a tweet at Lucy C. Parsons. You can find the links to both the Facebook group and my Twitter account in the show notes. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe in your podcast app and leave a review. Every review helps to spread the word to more people who will find the show interesting and helpful. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.